Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everybody. And let others obsess on the horse race. We've got issues. It's our 2013 election series, 30 issues in 30 days. We're halfway home today with issue 15, the arts after Bloomberg. The mayor has been seen as very friendly to the arts, from the big public art spectacles like Christo and Jean-Claude's The Gates in Central Park to hundreds of millions of dollars of funding for community arts organizations from his own pockets. So what's the legacy and what happens next? For this, we welcome Mayor Bloomberg's commissioner for the Department of Cultural Affairs, Kate Levin. Hi, Commissioner. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you so much.
Give us the big picture. How have you and the mayor seen the role of government in the arts?
Well, I think the mayor has really valued the role of nonprofit culture in achieving all of his objectives. It's a, you know, it's a part of a five-borough economic strategy. It's part of making the city as innovative and friendly as possible to our citizens, to visitors, to immigrants. It's part of making sure that we are a green city. You know, it's a city of the present, city of the future.
The budget for the department, as I've read it, is more than $150 million a year. The mayor's personal philanthropies have reportedly been giving another $17 million or so the last few years. Who gets the city money? Individual artists, the major museums, community groups more into participation than display? I'm sure all of the above. But how do you decide the mix?
So the city has cultural commitments in a number of different directions. We believe there are around 1,200 cultural nonprofits in the city of New York. We receive applications from around 1,100 of them, and we fund around 900 of them. So we fund about 80 or so percent of the groups looking to us for some kind of dollars. The city has a historic relationship with 33 institutions that are on city-owned property. And again, then we fund another 900 or so, all disciplines, all over New York, large, small. One of the interesting things about our portfolio is half of them have annual operating budgets of less than $250,000. So the image of culture as sort of high-end and elite just couldn't be farther from the truth.
What's the range of those 31 organizations on city-owned property? From the top, it's the Metropolitan Museum, mm-hmm. right?
Yep. They include Carnegie Hall, the Brooklyn Academy of Music, Snug Harbor, the Wave Hill House in the Bronx. It's a whole range, number of organizations in Queens, Botanical Garden, zoos, you name it, we got it.
And I gather you and the mayor see arts funding as nourishing for the city, both culturally and economically. Can you quantify the economics part?
We believe that there is a roughly 1-9 leverage point city funding to private funding raised. And of course, that can be dramatically higher depending on the organization. So there's a huge public-private partnership going on here. The economic bounce, it's one of the challenges with culture, is it's, you know, we don't have social science that's finely enough tuned to really do this. But the city is now attracting over 53 million visitors a year. Half of them say they're coming here explicitly for culture. So the economic impact of that is huge. And then, you know, there's also the commercial piece of culture. It's roughly a $22 billion industry a year. If nonprofit is around $6 billion of that, the fact is no one comes here to be a nonprofit performer versus a for-profit performer. So, you know, arguably, all the money that Broadway is generating belongs on the nonprofit side of the ledger as well as part of our leverage.
Which is to say that the city has a role in developing Broadway. Those are private businesses.
They are private businesses, but if we can help support the talent and create the kind of nurturing environment where people want to keep coming here. I mean, one of the little known facts about New York is it's the biggest college town in the country. A lot of reason people want to come here and study brain chemistry is because of the jazz club down the street. We need to be making the city a kind of place where all sorts of people feel at home here.
So listeners, what would you like to see the next mayor do for the arts in New York City, since this is in our 30 Issues in 30 Days election series? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Tell the current Cultural Affairs Commissioner, Kate Levin, maybe she'll tell her successor what you said when they have transition time in January, 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. What do you want the next mayor to do for the arts? Bloomberg is such a data-driven manager. We had his chief data guy, Mike Flowers, earlier in the program. Do you keep metrics on the arts?
We do, and it's one of the sort of frankly, bigger challenges we have because, you know, the role of government is to provide standardized services. The arts are valuable, particularly to the degree that they're not standardized. You know, you don't want everybody to be doing pointillism at 4 o'clock on Thursdays. So how do you create some understanding of what public service you're providing? So, you know, one of the ways that we look at this is, again, budget size, geographic distribution. We try and track which different artistic disciplines are flourishing. But we also look at number stories. So, for example, the Brooklyn Academy of Music, the Brooklyn Museum, and the Brooklyn Botanic Garden are in the top 1% of employers in the borough of Brooklyn. That's a pretty impressive statistic.
And there are cases like the area around BAM where you see arts and development is intertwined, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's also quality of life. Crime comes down. You know, green spaces tend to flourish. The arts have this, again, incredible leveraging effect on quality of life around cities. And that's part of the reason the mayor's been so supportive.
Have you run into tough decisions where you want to fund something that you think is just great art or public service, but something else looks like a hit or a revenue generator?
You know, we don't tend to have to make decisions around that because there is so much strength here. Our job is really to be as responsive as possible. And, you know, what you're always looking to do is drive the long-term health of organizations that ultimately are private nonprofits. So you don't want to get them too used to funding that may end up being fickle, and you really want to work on sustaining their underlying management capacity.
The city does own arts organizations, including what's known as the Big Five museums. You mentioned some of that other list, some of the others on the list of 31, but not some other iconic art spaces in New York like the Museum of Modern Art. Why does it make sense for the city to own the ones that it owns rather than help support them?
Part of this is just lost in the mists of time. I mean, part of the reason I would say New York is the biggest arts funder in the country, which we are, is because in the 1860s, a group of citizens came to the city and said, if we create a collection, will you build a building and maintain it? And that became the Museum of Natural History. So, again, a lot of this is historical. What we own is the land and buildings. Private nonprofits program them, and it may sound counterintuitive, and some of my colleagues in Europe and Asia think this is pretty weird, but it works kind of brilliantly because we get the innovation and the risk-taking of the private sector melded with the public commitment to access.
Will you comment on the controversy currently with the Metropolitan Museum of Art over admission? There's a suggested donation posted, but a lawsuit claims it's designed to mislead most visitors into thinking it's a required admission fee. Are they not being clear and explicit enough?
We believe they are being clear and explicit, but because, you know, this is a legal matter, I can't really comment more fully than that.
But the Modern, which is privately owned, just charges admission straight up. It's that city law which would prohibit just an admission fee as a requirement at the museums that are on the CIG list?
Every one of these institutions has a particular kind of lease or license with the city that was based on the moment at which they were created and the kind of cultural discipline they pursue.
Should they be able to just charge admission, in your opinion, at the Met?
I think public access is what's critical, and you know the Met provides it in spades. It's also the case that there are lots of other forms of access. The Met entertains thousands and thousands of school children for free every year. Its website now has 44 million hits a year for its art history timeline. So all of these organizations, big, small, around the city. I mean, cultural organizations are created to attract audiences, not to keep them out. So they do that in lots of different ways.
New York City Cultural Affairs Commissioner Kate Levin, our lines are jammed with people wanting to talk. You know our audience cares about the arts. And Craig in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Well, hello, Brian. Thank you very much. Just a very quick comment. Your show is terrific. I know if I listen to a little of you and a little Geraldo in the morning, I get the world. So,
I'll figure out how to take that. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I wanted to say a word on behalf of New York City Opera, founded by Mr. LaGuardia, another famous mayor. I have a connection to it. I won't go into that. But it's very, very sad demise over the course of really, really dire management decisions for several years is a real loss to the city. And I think there, a lot of journalism in the last week or so has even said there is still an audience for this organization.
And so what's your question to the commissioner about it?
Well, if there is any chance of resurrection, even under slightly different circumstances and certainly different management, but if that kind of an organization founded by the mayor to be the people's opera, has a chance of resurrection in some form.
Thank you for your call. And does the city have a relationship with City Opera?
We do have a relationship with City Opera, and we've worked very closely with it during the term of this administration. And I would say, you know, the headline there is that there were certain economic pressures on that organization, which it was late in recognizing. I also want to say that I think George Steele's done a terrific job. The art that he's been producing, the reviews he's been garnering have been spectacular. And Board Chair Chuck Wall also did a terrific job. It's just sometimes you try and turn a ship and it's too late. I do believe that going through the Chapter 11 process, there are conversations about trying to continue the legacy and mission of the organization, and you know, we'll get more clarity on that in the coming months.
Do you think the arts economy is particularly stressed right now? We have City Opera's demise, Brooklyn's Third Ward, such an important arts education center, going under. Are these isolated, unique cases, in your opinion, or indicative of something larger in the arts economy?
I think the arts economy is always under stress. I think, you know, this is a difficult time, but it was a difficult time, you know, in 2008 for very different reasons. Again, I think City Opera's situation is the product of several decades worth of decisions. Third Ward's a for-profit enterprise, so we are less close to that, and I don't have a whole lot of insight. But what I will say is that we recognize how valuable the space issues that it addressed were. And one of the things that we've done is create a nonprofit real estate company called Spaceworks. The city's incubated that, and its sole purpose is to develop affordable rehearsal and studio space for artists. We have our two first spaces online and hope to bring a lot more of it online in the future. So the folks that have been served by Third Ward will also have other options.
Tim in the Bronx, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tim.
Hey there. So my big concern is that I'm a visual artist, and you're talking about great institutions that are in New York that are, you know, giant buildings. But I'm seeing generations of artists being priced out of the city by gentrification and by fabulously wealthy artists coming in and buying a place and running up studio prices and rents. I can't afford to stay in the city anymore, and I know a lot of folks like me who are in the same boat. Is this anything the new mayor would be thinking about?
Tim, thank you. Of course, we hear this from artists so much. I don't know if this falls under the purview of the Department of Cultural Affairs at all, but artists are leaving the city as well as coming to the city because they feel they can't afford to live here anymore.
Again, affordability has always been a problem. At the moment, we are seeing more artists coming than going. But again, you always want to make sure talented people feel like they can find a home here. The endeavor that I was mentioning before, Spaceworks, is designed to help address that by creating affordable artist studios around the city. And hopefully that portfolio will really materially increase so that people like our caller will have an easier time trying to figure out a way to stay here.
I know you can't speak for the mayor's private donations, but they've been estimated at, one figure I read was $200 million during his mayoralty, and many arts organizations are concerned about whether his support will continue. What kind of challenge do you think this will present for your successor at Cultural Affairs?
You know, I really can't speak to the mayor's private philanthropy, but I do think that everything that we've been able to accomplish has been because people have confidence in culture as a public-private partnership. And I think it's, you know, incumbent on the city to help that by pointing out the value of culture to this municipality. And I think that really helps on the private side to continue that kind of generosity.
How have you and the mayor managed this unusual financial relationship? How would you take his private giving into account when deciding on the city's public giving? For example, his recent $15 million grant for interactive apps for five major museums, do you then steer away from apps?
Absolutely not at all. I don't know what's happening on that side of the wall.
And that's it,
yep.
Period. RJ in Prospect Heights, you're on WNYC. Hello, RJ.
Hi. I was a fundraiser for a small nonprofit arts organization in the early 2000s, and from what I understood at the time, the major groups, which I guess we used to call FIGs, the cultural institution groups, got 80% of the city's, the DCA's, the Department of Cultural Affairs budget, and the rest of the small nonprofits or medium-sized nonprofits had to apply and struggle for the rest of the 20%. I wondered if this breakdown had continued under Mayor Bloomberg or if there had been a conscious decision to change it or to rearrange it in some fashion.
The previous statistic was actually roughly 85% of the city's expense dollars went to the 33 city-owned institutions. At this point, it's down to 80. It might be slightly less. But what we've really done is try to grow the entire cultural budget, which we have, and work very hard to allow more organizations that are not on city-owned property to have substantial access to city funds. We've done that. We moved to a peer panel application process that increased our applicant pool by over 20%, and our grants went up by the dollar amounts went up by 30%. But the other thing that we do is we fund capital projects, and our current capital budget is around $700 million, and that used to just go to city-owned properties. We've expanded that so that at this point we're funding projects at over 200 organizations around the city. So it's another really meaningful way that we can support organizations, whether or not they happen to be on city property.
So given that, what's the leading piece of advice you would give your successor in terms of how to presumably keep moving in those directions?
Well, you know, on the one hand, I would never presume to give anyone advice about this. But what I would say is that it is sometimes difficult to understand how nonprofit culture fits into a portfolio of city services. It doesn't quantify the way other kind of agencies do. And frankly, what most artists and arts organizations want from the city is they want money and they want to be left alone. And that's not really standard in terms of what the rest of government is supposed to do. But I would urge people to be really thoughtful and attentive in understanding the incredible value that the sector does provide. Because if you're a patient investor, I don't think there's any better municipal investment than in arts and culture.
Do you think you have to argue, you know, some of them, I'm not going to ask you about particular candidates, but some leading candidates have said, look, with all the big problems the city has, arts may not be my first priority, when housing and jobs and other things might be more basic needs for government to address in terms of inequality or other things. Do you need to make a case that the arts deserve funding at least at the level that they've had?
I mean, I think housing, jobs, the economy, any one of those issues, education, they are all extraordinarily well served by culture. It's incumbent on my agency to keep making that case, and it's incumbent for the field to keep providing information that helps to really bring that into focus.
Carol in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Carol.
Hi. I think it would be a great idea if the next administration would form a liaison between Hollywood and the public.
Between Hollywood and the public?
Mm-hmm. Like just plain old New Yorkers.
Uh-huh.
Who may have a script for a play. I think that would be a great idea.
As long as Hollywood produces those movies in New York, right?
Well, it's one of the great things that we've done with our terrific film commissioner is we actually created the Made in New York tax credit. It included the capacity for talent on film and television shoots to actually make donations to nonprofit cultural organizations. And that's actually been terrific. But we do work with New Yorkers and New York neighborhoods very extensively in our film and TV initiatives.
You want to talk more about the capital budget? Because it's not just funding individual programs or individual organizations, but you mentioned capital budget before, and I know that's expanded a lot. So what kinds of building are we talking about? What kinds of investment?
Well, I'm not supposed to play favorites, but one of my favorite projects that we've done is the Harlem Stage, the Gatehouse. It was during the Victorian period, people actually would go watch the water system at work. So it's this beautiful little castle on 134th Street that has been transformed into, I think, one of our most exciting new performing arts centers. So that's a pretty interesting project. Pregonas Theater, which is one of our best nonprofit theaters in the Bronx. We've helped them with building out a theater and a cabaret space in the South Bronx. So, you know, just lots and lots of examples. In some cases, we've bought equipment. For example, here at WNYC, city funded some of the equipment purchases. But being able to literally build out and improve and renovate the city's capital footprint in culture has been very important. And a lot of these projects have really pioneered green technologies. Our first, the city's first LEED Platinum building is a cultural facility, the Queens Botanic Garden.
Chelsea in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hi, Chelsea.
Hi. I just had a thought that as another, starving artist in New York, as the previous caller was, I just think it would be great if New York became known as a place where completely unknown artists could get known, basically, and become known as a place where, people got discovered. Not even discovered, but where really great artists were coming from that were not from kind of the typical backgrounds where, you know, the private art school kid or, you know, whatever other stereotype you want to put. But
do you think New York is not that place today?
Oh, no, I do think it is. But, you know, like the previous caller said, it's gotten so expensive and, you know, you don't have that same, you know, communal ability as, you know, Soho back in the day or, you know, downtown, basically. And so there's less of, like, the young, you know, completely out there, you know. You tend to have, like, trends, you know, like, pretty obvious trends. And it seems like the successful artists are much older. You can always kind of find, if you look at any, like, artist that's producing and making money, why that's happening, you know, where the advantage is. And I'm just thinking create some sort of opportunity for someone who has, you know, none of those pathways.
Mm-hmm. I hear what you're saying. And I'm sure you hear this kind of plea all the time.
We do. And, you know, one of the things that we try and do, the government can't directly fund individual artists, but we provide substantial dollars to the borough arts councils to re-grant individually to artists. So we like to think that we're, again, putting public funding to use to help individuals. We also have a great program called Materials for the Arts that provides millions of dollars worth of free supplies to artists annually working through the Borough Arts Councils and other kinds of organizations. So we are always trying to be keenly aware of the needs of the individuals who create this whole creative community here.
Want to look back now and say you were willing to shout out one of your favorites. Any other favorites on your own watch? Things that work better than you dreamed, perhaps?
You know, I think that the response to the kind of public art we've been doing has been really phenomenal. I think people have been able to move past looking at these things as incursions of someone's taste and really engaging with them in wonderful ways. The group Creative Time did a project called Key to the City a couple of years ago that you started out in Times Square. You got to walk the red carpet, sign a book, and were given a key that opened just secret and wonderful things all over the city. And more people took that trip. We had a number of marriage proposals in the course of visiting this particular work of public art. So I think that's something that you know, we're very proud of and hope that spirit of saying yes to individual artists with ideas for helping us reimagine our city will really continue.
We'll take that as the advice to your successor right there. We have a minute left. There is a 1% for arts movement that speaks up in political seasons. I think the current budget is about 0.25% of the total city budget, though it's the largest, you know, by far funder of arts in the country at the municipal level. Do you support 1% for the arts?
I support anything that brings attention and focus on the arts and that tries to make a case for additional government funding. I think the, you know, why 1%, why not 15%, why not, you know, 0.02%. I think that's the difficulty with this conversation, but I very much respect the advocacy move of making the case that this is enormously valuable for the city.
30 seconds left. Anything else you want to say about the arts in New York City?
I think this really is one of our signature industries, one of the few things that's in all neighborhoods of every borough. And, you know, I'm just delighted to see that people are increasingly understanding its enormous value.
Kate Levin is Mayor Bloomberg's commissioner for the Department of Cultural Affairs. And there you have issue 15 in our 30 Issues in 30 Days election series. Issue 15 being, of course, the arts in New York City. Next week, we begin a whole week. On Monday, I should say, we begin a whole week of issues on jobs in the New York and New Jersey elections, one of the most central issues on both sides of the river. Have a great weekend, everybody. Brian Lehrer on WNYC.